Well, good morning, everyone. It still is morning, right? Oh, yeah. Okay. I know next time I speak with Tim not to prepare as much information. Sorry. But we do have the room till, I think, 5, don't we, today? Yeah? Okay. Plenty of time. All right. If you would go ahead and hand out the, I actually made a handout today, so you know you're in trouble when you get a handout, right? But I wanted to give this out just to hopefully make it a little easier to follow along, because it's, I want to talk about, and I'm going to kind of give you a hint at the beginning so you won't be wondering, but I want to talk about a man named Asaph. He's mentioned in the Old Testament. He was a Levite and wrote, in, well, has his name on 12 of the Psalms in the Old Testament. But before we get to him, there's a little bit of background and a little history that I want you to be aware of before we even begin to talk about him. And the handout that's being given out is from a book called The Kingdom of Priests, which is a book that we use at Ambassador College and I think one of our Old Testament survey classes. But the gentleman points out some timelines and dates that we'll discuss later. And I included also a map because we're going to be talking about some of these locations, and I wanted you to kind of have an idea of how close together a lot of these locations are. The year is thought to have been approximately 977 B.C., and King David had been ruling over the entire nation of Israel for the past 27 years. And I'm putting this into this timeline that you guys have. He'd been ruling the nation of Israel for the past 27 years, and he wanted to relocate the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. He had conquered the Philistines to the west after fighting multiple campaigns against them. He had conquered the Ammonites and the Syrians to the east and north. His armies had fought the forces of Moab and Edom. One of his early victories had given him the city of Jerusalem, which the Jebusites had managed to retain because of its location throughout the reign of the judges and King Saul. So you think that here's a city right in the middle of Israel that not until King David came along was actually conquered by the Israelites. 2 Samuel 8 provides us a summary of the wars of David. And we're not going to read, I was planning to start in verse 1, but in the sake of interest of time, we're going to read the summary verses here. So let's drop down in 2 Samuel 8, and we get kind of a summary all the way down in verse 11 of kind of all the things that David had done in some of his wars and battles. Verse 11 of this passage, King David also dedicated these, speaking of the spoils that he had gotten from some of the battles. King David also dedicated these to the Lord, along with the silver and gold that he had dedicated from all the nations which he had subdued, from Syria, from Moab, from the people of Ammon, from the Philistines, from Amalek, from the spoil of Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, the king of Zobah, which were part of the Syrian empire. And David made himself a name when he returned from killing 18,000 Syrians in the Valley of Salt. He also put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all of Edom, he put garrisons. And all the Edomites became David's servants. And the Lord preserved David wherever he went. God gave David rest from all of his enemies, and he began to work on building projects within the city of Jerusalem. And that's part of what this writer ties some of his timeline to, is that one of the people that David contracted with to build, for instance, his palace and his house, was a gentleman named Hiram of Tyre. And this guy did not begin ruling in Tyre until later on in King David's reign. So that's part of the reason why some of these dates are as late as they are. Now, if you go and read the books of Samuel, David bringing the Ark to Jerusalem is mentioned very early. So if you just took that as your timeline, you would think, oh, David became king, and the next thing he did is he went and got the Ark and brought it to Jerusalem. But I think that this And like I said, this is not dogmatic. It's not doctrine. But I think this timeline makes sense based on the other things that were happening around him. So he began to think about building, as it says, he built his own house. He built a palace, in a sense. But he had to go through years of military campaigns before he got to this point. This is what the timeline points out. He wanted to make Jerusalem not only his capital city, but also the center of worship for the entire nation. Prior to this time, there had been various locations that had served as centers of worship for the nation. The young Samuel had served under the priest Eli in Shiloh. Now everybody knows who Samuel is, right? We heard a sermon about the prayer of Hannah. Hannah prayed in the book of 1 Samuel to have the child, Samuel. And he was given to the priest at Shiloh to serve. And he became the last one to serve as a judge in Israel. But he had served in the religious center in Shiloh, which was deserted after the Philistines defeated Israel and captured the ark. This occurred probably early in Samuel's life, as probably younger than a teenager, I would imagine. An altar is also mentioned in the city of Gibeon, where sacrifices were made, and that's on the map here. You'll see Shiloh is up to the north. Off to the east or west of Jerusalem is Gibeon. And we also know that the city of Nob, which was just over the brook Kidron from Jerusalem, which is not listed on this map, but it would be like right to the right of the dock for Jerusalem is where you would find Nob. And that is mentioned as a worship center where David, when he was fleeing from Saul, went to get help, and he got the sword of Goliath. And it says that they were putting out showbread. So apparently there was, perhaps the tabernacle was at this location during Saul's reign as king, which was later destroyed by Saul. As you know, as when Saul found out that they had helped David, he sent Doeg the Edomite, and he basically razed the city, it says. So that was no longer a worship center after that happened. We also have references to Saul carrying spoils from a battle with the Amalekites to Gilgal to be sacrificed to the Lord. So apparently there was something at that location where they would go to make sacrifices. So we had many places as we go through the reign of Judges and the reign of Saul where we can see that there were worship centers throughout the nation. David wanted to centralize that worship in Jerusalem. Before that, Saul had never attempted to do that. He had his capital city in Gibeah, and there was never any mention that there was any worship performed in his capital city. But David wanted to put them together. He had already established that as his capital. And I believe that God inspired him to do this because of the later importance of that city, as we see throughout prophecy that it would have. That God wanted this city to be the religious worship center of the nation. The ark had remained. Now let's talk about the ark. The ark had remained in the hands of the Philistines at that previous battle when Samuel was young. They had only kept the ark for 7 months because God had plagued them so badly that they had to get rid of it. They didn't. They just couldn't keep it. So they put it on a cart and they just sent it into the territories of Israel. And it ended up being taken to a city called Kirjath-Jearim, which happened to be in the territory of Judah. Now, it had been in that city for 20 years. When Samuel, who is now in his prime as a judge, this is before Saul, before David, Samuel led the Israelites to victory against the Philistines. And it's mentioned in 1 Samuel 7. And part of that, in that chapter, it says the ark had been in that city, Kirjath-Jearim, for 20 years at that point in time. So David, and it was still in that city when David retrieved it and brought it to Jerusalem over 100 years later, if you go by this timeline. Now, you could say that it wasn't 100 years, but you would have to say that it was at least 60 years if you go by Samuel's time and Saul's time, where it was still in that city. Saul reigned for 40 years. And we don't know exactly when in Samuel's time that he led them to victory against the Philistines. So 60 to 100 years it had been off in this city in the territory of Judah, which you can see over here is over to the west of Jerusalem. And David wanted to bring it to Jerusalem. And here's a quote. I've got a quote from the book, The Kingdom of Priests, where he kind of summarizes the David's timeline. Quote, to summarize the last years of David's reign, David brought the Ark into Jerusalem around 977. Absalom rebelled in 976. The census was undertaken in the next year. Solomon was made co-regent around 973, and David died in 971. Thus, the tabernacle of David was in use only for 6 years of David's administration and 11 years of Solomon's. End quote. It is in the story of the Ark being moved to Jerusalem where we first read about a young man named Asaph. All of the background and history we've gone through leads up to this. He was a Levite descendant from the family of Gershon. They were charged with various duties regarding the tabernacle in the wilderness, which were no longer being performed because the tabernacle was semi-permanent in Gibeon. And his assignments included worshiping God with musical instruments. This was something that David actually came up with the guidance of God, and we'll see that later in Scripture. So we read of him in 1 Chronicles 15. Let's turn to 1 Chronicles 15. We read of him as King David began to make his preparations for the second attempt to bring the Ark. And we know that most of us probably have heard the story about the first attempt where Uzzah was killed. And it scared everybody so much that they just stopped and left the Ark where it was for 3 months and then came back. And here is the second attempt. 1 Chronicles 15, verse 1. David built houses for himself in the city of David, and he prepared a place for the Ark of God and pitched a tent for it. So he got the place ready where he wanted to put the Ark. Then David said, no one may carry the Ark of God but the Levites, for the Lord has chosen them to carry the Ark of God and to minister before him forever. And they figured this out after the first time. Okay, God doesn't want his cart to be on a cart, or his Ark to be on a cart. He wants people to carry it. And David gathered all Israel together at Jerusalem to bring up the Ark of the Lord to its place, which he had prepared for it. Then David assembled the children of Aaron and the Levites. I drop down to verse 11. And David called for Zadok and Abiathar for the priests and for the Levites, for Uriel, Isaiah, Joel, Shemaiah, Eliel, and Aminadab. Wow, there's some tongue twisters coming up. So he said to them, you are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites. Sanctify yourselves, you and your brethren, that you may bring up the Ark of the Lord God of Israel to the place I have prepared for it. Now let's go down to verse 16. Then David spoke to the leaders of the Levites to appoint their brethren to be the singers, accompanied by instruments of music, stringed instruments, harps, and cymbals, by raising the voice with resounding joy. So the Levites appointed Heman, the son of Joel, and this was actually the grandson of Samuel. This Heman is the grandson of Samuel, and of his brethren, Asaph, the son of Berechiah, and of their brethren, the sons of Meriah, Ethan, and the son of Kushiah, and with them their brethren of the second rank. And here we have a lot of names, which I won't read. I'll let you read them. But let's drop down to where it says that the gatekeepers, verse 19, the singers, Heman, Asaph, and Ethan, were to sound the cymbals of bronze. So they assembled pretty much a fairly large choir, you would think, with instruments and musical accompaniment to celebrate bringing the Ark to Jerusalem. In the next chapter, we're given more information about his duties. Let's just log over to the next chapter in First Chronicles 16 and verse 4. And speaking of David, it says, he appointed some of the Levites to minister before the ark of the Lord to commemorate, to thank, and to praise the Lord God of Israel. Asaph, the chief, and next to him, Zechariah, then Jael, and all these nice gentlemen with long names. Jael was stringing instruments and harps, but Asaph made music with cymbals. So apparently his specialty was the cymbals. And he probably was one of the leaders of leading, you know, like a choir director, I would imagine. Verse 7, on that day, David first delivered this psalm into the hand of Asaph and his brethren to thank the Lord. And then the rest of the chapter, you have the psalm that David gave to Asaph and the Levites. And here we see the reference to the fact that the Levites had been collecting psalms and preserving them. And verses from this psalm that's in here in this chapter, in verse Chronicles 16, are found in Psalm 105, Psalm 96, and Psalm 106. So apparently not only were they keeping and preserving them, but they were also putting them together in ways, I guess, that made sense to them. Because if you here it seems that we have one psalm that was given to David, but after he gave it to them, they included verses from that in three different psalms. Or perhaps it has to do with the way things were broken up into different chapters and verses. Now I go down to verse 37. Verse 37. So he left Asaph and his brothers still talking about their duties there before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord to minister before the Ark regularly as every day's work required. And Obed-Edom and his 68 brethren, including Obed-Edom, the son of Jeduthun and Hosea, to be the gatekeepers. And Zadok the priest and his brethren the priests before the tabernacle of the Lord at the high place that was at Gibeon. So here we see, okay, we have the ark is in Jerusalem. Zadok, some of the Levites are serving there. And Zadok the priest and his brethren are serving in Gibeon. So there's a separation currently between the two places. So continuing on, verse 39. Zadok and priests and his brethren before the tabernacle of the Lord at the high place that was at Gibeon to offer burnt offerings to the Lord on the altar of burnt offering regularly morning and evening and to do according to all that is written in the law of the Lord which he commanded Israel. So as I mentioned, we see at this point the ark is in Jerusalem with a tent over it. The tent of meeting is in Gibeon, where they have the bronze altar, making sacrifices to God. And we see this pointed out to us if you go to 2 Chronicles 1. I just wanted to read this because it kind of shows, even in Solomon's time, that this was still the case. 2 Chronicles 1 and verse 3, it says, and Solomon and all the assembly with him went to the high place that was at Gibeon, for the tabernacle of the meeting with God was there, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, had made in the wilderness. But David had brought the ark of God from Kirjath-Jearim to the place David had prepared for it, for he had pitched a tent for it at Jerusalem. Now the bronze altar that Belazel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, had made, he put before the tabernacle of the Lord. Solomon and the assembly saw him there. So we have, at this point, even in the early years of Solomon's reign, there's still we have the ark referred to as being in Jerusalem, and the tabernacle is still in the city of Gibeon. The two would be brought together at the completion of Solomon's temple 17 years later. In First Chronicles 28, we see these new duties for the Levites have been given to David by God himself. And it's a long chapter. We won't read through it, but if for anyone that's a real detail-oriented person, builders and people, you may want to go read it because God gave David details down to the weight of the lampstands and the bowls that he was to make for the temple. And in verse 19 of that chapter, David says this, in summary, all this the Lord made me understand in writing by his hand upon me, all the works of these plans. And this included the service and divisions of the Levites, as he detailed further up in verse 13. Here, and again, we see Asaph mentioned again in 2 Chronicles 5. As Solomon moves the ark from the city of David, where it had been under a tent, into the completed temple. This is 11 years into Solomon's reign. So it says he began to work on the temple 4 years after he began to rule, and it took him 7 years to complete it. So 11 years later, after he began reigning, he was able to basically bring together the temple with the ark. He started in the fourth year of his reign, as I said, and finished in the 11th year. Let's look at this in 2 Chronicles 5, starting in verse 11. 2 Chronicles 5, 11. And it came to pass when the priests came out of the most holy place, for all the priests who were present had sanctified themselves without keeping to their divisions. So at this point in time, instead of having all the priests separated by the divisions of how they were going to worship, they all sanctified themselves so they could be there to help with this very important occasion of the temple opening. And the Levites who were the singers, all those of Asaph and Heman and Jeduthun. So here we see Asaph here is present at this occasion. With their sons and their brethren, stood at the east end of the altar, clothed in white linen, having cymbals, stringed instruments and harps, and with them 120 priests sounding with trumpets. Can you imagine? 120 trumpets. That is quite the band. I just can't imagine the sound that they must have made. And it came to pass when the trumpeters and singers were as one, to make one sound to be heard in praising and thanking the Lord, and when they lifted up their voice with the trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music and praised the Lord, saying, "For he is good, for his mercy endures forever," that the house of the Lord was filled with a cloud. So God apparently was pleased to have the tabernacle in Jerusalem with the ark inside of it. Everything had come together after a couple of generations of them being separated. I called Asaph a young man earlier because it seems possible that he was young, considering that he served with David. He was there when David brought the ark into Jerusalem toward the end of his reign. And then he was also there when Solomon brought the temple and the ark together. David, and this is in 1 Chronicles 23 or 25, I forget which chapter, but he had changed the minimum age of service for the Levites from 30 to 20. He dropped it from 30 down to 20. So it's possible that Asaph was a younger man when he started to serve in this role, and that he could have grown up in the years of King David's reign and come into that service at a very young age. If the theory is true, just think of all the things he would have seen through the years. The last years of David's reign, how chaotic that must have been, as the different sons of David tried to take over. They saw that their father was getting old, and they thought, hey, it's my time. It's my chance. That's the kind of things that he would have seen. And some of the Psalms kind of may allude to some of the events that he was seeing during that time. Now, let's shift gears and talk a little about the Psalms that are attributed to Asaph. There are 12 Psalms in the Book of Psalms that have the superscript A Song of Asaph. They are Psalm 50 and Psalm 73 to 83, sorry. Some of them, like I said, we could attribute to the original man Asaph. But others seem to have been written either by his descendants or perhaps in the style of Asaph, perhaps. There's possibilities of both happening. Some of the Psalms mentioned the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, which obviously could not have been written by the original Asaph. The Sansino commentary in the Book of Psalms mentions that the title of Asaph may not mean the psalm was written by the original Asaph, the contemporary of David. Quote, "The title does not necessarily indicate authorship. He probably began the compilation of a hymnal which was added to by his descendants, some of who were famed as singers at the time of the exile." The Book of Ezra mentions the singers, and this is the time of the exile is when the Israelites, the nation of Judah, and those who were with them were allowed to come back from captivity to Israel. and rebuild Jerusalem in approximately 535 BC. So this was generations after Asaph, the original Asaph, lived. So they're mentioned in the list in the book of Ezra as singers, the sons of Asaph. So it's very probable that the Psalms that have that title are some of them were probably written by the descendants of this man. Some of the themes that we find in these Psalms, in all of the Psalms, are, as pointed out by Sansino, are what they call the didactic style, which simply means that they all have the purpose of teaching a lesson. You know, some of the Psalms are more about praising God or other topics, but all of Asaph's Psalms have a lesson that they're trying to teach the hearer or the reader. Here are some of the themes that we find in the Psalms. God is the great judge of all the earth. God will bring the wicked to judgment in his own time. God determines who rules in the kingdoms of men. References God's deliverance of Israel from Egypt and pleads for similar deliverance for the nation of Israel. God will defeat all the enemies of Israel. God will bring punishment on his people because of wickedness. Now, for the remainder of the time, let's just look at a few passages. I don't want to take a lot more time, but let's just consider some of the Psalms of Asaph. Turn to Psalm 50. Psalm 50, and we'll read it. We'll start reading at verse 14. The New King James Version has the title on the Psalm of God, the Righteous Judge. After talking about Israel's physical offerings and the fact that God really doesn't need their physical goats and sheep and bulls, God talks about what he really wants from his people. Verse 14. Offer to God thanksgiving and pay your vows to the Most High. Call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. You have to wonder if this was written by the original Asaph, as he saw the decline of David's family around him. David's son Amnon had raped Absalom's sister Tamar. Absalom waited for 2 years and then killed Amnon. Continuing in verse 16, but to the wicked God says, what right have you to declare my statutes or take my covenant in your mouth, seeing you hate instruction and cast my words behind you? When you saw a thief, you consented with him and have been a partaker with adulterers. You give your mouth to evil. Your tongue frames deceit. You sit and speak against your brother. And I'm sure you saw plenty of that. You slander your own mother's son. These things you have done, and I kept silent. You thought that I was altogether like you, but I will rebuke you and set them in order before your eyes. Let's go to Psalm 73 now. Psalm 73. This is another one I feel could have been written by the original Asaph. He opens up about a very personal period of doubt he experienced in his own life. As he saw the wicked around him prospering while he was suffering, he starts with what will be his conclusion. God is good to those that are pure in heart. He then describes how the evil seem to have everything going for them. They don't have troubles like other people do. They scoff about their own wicked deeds and don't fear punishment. Perhaps he was thinking about the corruption he saw happening around him during the reign of Solomon, as toward the end of his reign he began to practice idolatry with his many foreign wives. He became very discouraged. Look at verse 13. Psalm 73, verse 13. Surely I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocence. He was like, why am I doing this? Why am I obeying God? All these other people are doing so well, and they're not worried about keeping the Sabbath or not eating pork or, you know, all these other things. God's blessing them. It says, then he went into the sanctuary, a place Asaph would have spent a lot of time in. And he realized the ultimate end of the wicked. Let's go down to verse 17. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understood their end. Surely you set them in slippery places. You cast them down to destruction. Oh, how they are brought to desolation, as in a moment. They are utterly consumed with terrors. So he realized what the important things were and what God was doing with his life. During this political season, I can't not mention the scripture, Psalm 75, verses 6 and 7, and I'll just read it. For exaltation comes neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south. But God is the judge. He puts down one and exalts another. So God decides whether it's going to be Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, whoever it may be. It's up to God who he's going to put up there. It's not up to us. Again, he's pointed out as the ultimate judge. He decides who rules in the kingdoms of men. And finally, let's go to Psalm 82. This I wanted to mention because it was mentioned. It was brought out in the personal appearance campaign, I think, in Steve Meyer's segment. And this is one of the Psalms of Asaph, or Psalms 82, verse 6. I said, you are gods, and all of you are the children of the Most High. This was used, as I said, at the PA, at the PAC this last weekend, to point out a truth revealed in the scriptures about God's plan for creating a family. Brethren, we cannot know how many of the Psalms were written by Asaph. I hope I piqued your interest a little bit in the Psalms and in the background that probably existed around these Psalms. We don't know exactly how many he wrote, but we do know that he created a legacy of service to God that lasted through generation after generation of his descendants. So the next time you read a psalm with the superscript, a psalm of Asaph, remember the man and the family that gave us those words. Thank you.